Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Living and Thriving time, and it's Thursday, my favorite day of the week. Actually, every day of the week that I wake up is a favorite day, but Thursday is especially fun because I get to spend an hour with you, learning, growing, living, thriving, exploring the world, exploring people, understanding what inspires people to do what they do, and hopefully they inspire other people too. My whole goal with this show is to give you an understanding of other perspectives, mind, body, and soul. Today's show is going to be a little unique because I've never really had anything political on before. I try to steer clear from that, but Paul's story seems very interesting to me, so I really want to dig into what inspires him to write what he writes about, what is his fulfillment and excitement, and does it inspire other people? Next week, we are going to have Anita Wilson on, and she writes a telltale tale about addiction and depression and recouping from that and strategies just to be well. She has a new book out called Well, and it talks about chronic pain, addiction, and depression. Should be on next Thursday here at Living and Thriving. Let's get to the point. Paul. Who are
yes,
you and
hello,
what do
Rusty.
You do? Hi, darling.
Yeah, well, Rusty, first of all, thank you for allowing me to come on to be on your show. I am actually a retired military veteran. And during the time I was in the military, as you can imagine, as a lot of other people have, I went through a number of experiences that I was later diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. And as I got a little bit older, I started realizing while I was in graduate school, while I was still in the Army, I had an opportunity to go back, that I had a knack for writing, and several of my professors told me the same thing. And I started realizing that when I wrote, it actually helped me kind of, it was an avenue of escape to look away from what I was dealing with. And that's how I really got into writing. And I used that writing as a way to help me not only express my experiences and things in a realistic way, but also I use it to help me deal with the PTSD.
And I think that's wonderful. I think that when you go through or are going through PTSD, I have as well, and I completely dig the fact that you find other ways to cope so you don't get dragged down by your thoughts. Your mind is your worst enemy, right? Why did you choose politics for your writing? It sounds kind of less fun than maybe a fantasy novel about dragons and queens.
Well, actually, Rusty, this Term Limits was my second book. I originally started out, I also have a book out called Danger Down Under. It is an adventure fiction set in Australia, and that's where I really started writing. And then, of course, since I live in and around Washington, D.C., I started having an idea for another type of book. And in fact, it was kind of interesting. When I first started kicking around the idea for Term Limits, my wife jokingly told me, if you write a book like that, she said, you're going to have the FBI at our door and I'm not going to know you any longer. it was very interesting. To make a long story short, Term Limits is not really a political book. It's a political crime thriller. So it's a fictional book. And it's basically the story of one man's way of dealing with his frustration and being fed up with what he sees going on around him. he and his family were greatly affected by some of the decisions that were made and weren't made by representatives in Congress, and it caused a lot of harm to his family. He finally got fed up with it and decided to take matters into his own hands and enact his own form of term limits in the method of running around, to put it quite bluntly, bumping off congressmen while the FBI tried to catch him.
Ooh, that sounds juicy.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not a political book in any sense. It does have politics involved, but it is a bipartisan type of book. He is an equal opportunity killer. He's an equal opportunity killer from members of both houses and from both political parties. So it doesn't matter to him who they are. He just feels that he and his family were done wrong, and he feels that this is his way of expressing himself and bringing attention to what's going on.
Well, I think it's just a wonderful concept for this day and age, for this time period, to kind of have a little escapism and a little bit of realism. What do you think is the character's major modus operandi?
Well, I mean, I can, and when you talk about realism, it's funny you should mention that, because writing fiction the way I write it, I love to write realistic fiction. So the characters and the story that I write are actually based on things that could actually happen. If there's something I'm not totally up on, I actually do research on the subject to make sure that what I include in the books are factual. I think it's important to be authentic in my writing because, you know, I think you can connect to the readers in that way rather than watching. And some people, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with action movies. And but, you know, when you've seen enough movies out of Hollywood where they remake movies in series and they're up to number 26 in a series, or you see them make movies where you've got buses jumping 200-foot chasms without wings, you know,
right.
I just enjoy writing realistic fiction that I think the readers can identify, because I think there are situations in my book with my character who I base some of my own experiences on that they could probably identify with, because some of the situations I would venture to say some of them may have encountered as well.
So your main character's motive, what is that passion point that drives him?
Well, this is I think his motive is his brother. He had a younger brother who had served in the military. His younger brother was injured very badly. He was treated very badly by the people that were supposed to take care of him. And it gets fairly involved, but the character, the main character in my book, he also worked as a congressional aide for a period of time and saw some of the things that they were doing, some of the things that they cut that deliberately hurt the programs his brother depended on. And his brother eventually committed suicide from those experiences. And he really held those people responsible for that. That and the death of his mother, because his mother, after his brother committed suicide, you know, he always thought that she died of a broken heart within a year. And he held them responsible for what happened to his family.
It's getting juicy. So, Paul, this is a great time for you to tell us your full name and where we find more information about you. It's your little commercial break.
Okay. My name is Paul Holbert. I have a website called The Literary Vet, LiteraryVet.net. I also am at theliteraryvet@gmail.com as well. And so you can find more information about my books. about my writing, or you can get in touch with me by going to my website or sending me an email.
Beautiful. So when you did your research about this poor fellow who's just taking back his own in his mind, how did you develop him? I mean, do you have the statistics on how many soldiers actually commit suicide and what that process is like? Or it must have been a really interesting to develop him.
Yeah, it's like I said, I actually worked for a period of time for the Veterans Administration after I retired from the Army. And I had a lot of opportunity to talk to a number of vets. Now, I retired just before Iraqi freedom and all of that kicked off in 2003, but I spent time in Desert Storm. I spent time in Bosnia. I spent time in Kosovo and a number of other places. But I had an opportunity to talk to some of the veterans who are coming back from those other conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan again, you know, missing limbs, damaged, you know, both physically and mentally. And, you know, I was able to talk to them about how the VA treated them, how they were being served by the VA. And for the most part, they were doing fairly well. But, you know, as far as statistics go, I know that I just saw one report not too long ago that said on the average, there's about 13 veterans a day that commit suicide. They vary in age, you know, from the younger ones to the very old. So, you know, I started looking at that and I just started putting together a character that said, you know, what could I do with this man? How could I get the story across of how important it is that we take care of these people and the effects that it has? Because, you know, we always hear about the bad effects. And I guess my purpose behind this was to be able to share in a fictional atmosphere the very things that could actually happen. Because, as I said, I write from a pretty realistic standpoint. And a lot of the things that I write in my book, I had direct experience with. So that's how I developed the character. He wanted to make sure that those people that were responsible for what happened to his brother, what happened to his family, he was tired of seeing the dysfunction, and he decided to make a bold statement and, quite frankly, of course, a criminal statement. And it changed his whole life because it was something that he had never done before. He had always done the honorable thing, and he struggled with the decision to do what he did. And the last straw was the death of his mother.
If you're out there listening to Paul and I chat away about his latest book, the chat room is open. If you have questions and you're too shy to call in, give me a little quick chat. It's open. It's alive. It's well. It's finally working. I'm excited. And if you want to call in and ask Paul questions directly yourself, that would be awesome. The number here is 929-477. 1165. Paul, what is your next creation?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because I just completed a rewrite of my first book I mentioned, Danger Down Under. That was written a few years ago, and I decided to do a rewrite, but a more, how can I say, in progress. I'm actually writing a sequel to Term Limits, and it's called Manhunt. It's kind of interesting because there's still going to be some of the characters that were in Term Limits. There's going to be a continuation of some of those stories. And in fact, I had a number of people when they read Term Limits, some people around here, especially locally that know me, they read it. You know, they came up and they said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that book ended the way it did. So I don't want to give it away, but I wrote Term Limits in a way where I could write a sequel story that involves some of the same characters that would continue that type of adventure.
Well, which direction do you want to go? Because this is really your time to share with us your story. And we have probably about 25 minutes left. So do you want to talk about the new book, the old book, or Down Under?
Well, I'll share a little bit about Danger Down Under with you. As I said, I wrote that a few years ago. The rewrite is dated this year, 2019. I will share with your listeners, most of my military career I spent in a field that a lot of people did not want to be in. And more specifically, I was a nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare specialist for the Army for most of my career. And
wow.
I decided to write a story that was fiction-based, set in Australia, along the Timor Straits and the Timor Island chains. And I did a lot of research. Again, like I said, I'm a military history buff, but I did a lot of research when writing the book. And basically, in a nutshell, you've got the mystery of a submarine convoy that was sunk along the strait during World War II that began to leak chemicals that were being shipped from the European war theater to Japan. Those chemicals leaked out and began to have an effect on the marine life along the strait. And as part of that effect, what it created was several Komodo dragons who live along the Timor Strait and the Timor Islands, who were oversized and began to terrorize northern Australia. At the same time, you had a group of people who were shipwrecked and realized what was going on. They wanted to be rescued, of course, not only to get back, but to get back and tell everyone what they had discovered. And at the same time, you have the ever-present cover-up by the authorities at hand who want to keep this under wraps and keep it a secret. So there's kind of a race to find out who's going to win and what's going to happen in the end of it. So that was Danger Down Under. As far as my sequel to Term Limits, as I mentioned, Manhunt, you're going to have some of those characters who are now set in a different atmosphere. One of the characters from Term Limits, who was a local police officer that got pulled into the investigation, is now an FBI agent. And he was sent on an assignment to track down someone that they feel was living in French Polynesia. And he ends up taking his wife along on the trip. She gets involved in the intrigue and, in fact, ends up being kidnapped by the person he's tracking. And there is a race to save her and to, in fact, of course, apprehend the criminal that he's after. So there's a lot of, I mean, a lot of excitement, a lot of intrigue. But again, one thing I'd like to stress is when you read these stories, you're going to find that they're written from a very realistic basis. And they're still exciting to read, but it's a believable type of fiction that I think people can identify with.
Do you happen to have one of your books next to you so that you can give us an excerpt so that we can get a good taste, sink our teeth into the writing?
Oh, gosh. Let me see. You can bear with me for just a second.
Absolutely.
You kind of caught me off guard with that one. I wasn't expecting that. but also, in the meantime, you know, I find that writing and writing this way, it really does help my PTSD, as I said before.
Yeah.
And I find that I'm able to, my wife says, and of course, and I see a doctor still once a month, but my wife says, you know, I can see a marked improvement in you. She said, you are doing so much better. And, you know, I really credit my writing for a good part of that. So bear with me a second. I'm trying to see if I can find an excerpt for you, because like I said, Gay, you caught me and I wasn't expecting that.
That's why I love doing this. Here we are. Here's your book. All right.
Yeah, I think you have it up on your site.
Yep, I got it.
So let me see if I can find something here that I'm just going to pick something out.
Yeah, just so that the audience can get a little taste for what style you have and get them excited about your book. I'm so excited to read more.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just going to take an excerpt from one of the chapters here. It's called A New Twist. I'm sorry. Kathleen, she is a news anchor. She's one of the characters in the story. And she's a news anchor who the killer has decided to contact and communicate with. And she's kind of torn by this. She understands what he's doing, but at the same time, she thinks that she should be trying to help the FBI catch this person because, you know, quite frankly, he's killing people. So let me just read a small excerpt here. It says, Kathleen was upset. She spent the night trying to justify what she did, but somehow couldn't. How had it come to this? Her leaked story of the note from the killer spread like wildfire, as was to be expected. Reporters descended on the small Virginia town like a gaggle of Black Friday shoppers at a mall the day after Thanksgiving. It's a reference to a small town here in Northern Virginia, Manassas, Virginia. It was embarrassing to see how our colleagues behaved, interrupting residents as they talked to walk down the streets. She was starting to dislike the news, at least this kind. She didn't want to be another story for someone else's byline and thought back on Al's comments about getting the ratings. Al was an FBI agent who's helped trying to track this guy down, and he thought she was exposing all this to up her ratings and her station's ratings, just as a background. It seems that was what it was about these days. After all, that's what Jeff was worried about in getting the story out before someone else beat them to it. That was her editor, Jeff. She called her boss early that morning and told him she had to take the day off. She couldn't come in. It was rare that she took a sick day, but she felt compelled to. Now she was driving to the Carolina coast to her family's old beach house. It was there she usually found some solitude and cleared her mind when things got rough. After her parents' death in a car accident 3 years ago, she almost sold the place, but had since enjoyed staying here on a number of occasions, so she kept it. The drive was interrupted by her cell phone. It was a station number calling. She reluctantly answered, "Hello." So I'll read you just another short piece here along with this. It'll give you an idea of what's going on. "Hey, girl, I heard you weren't coming in today. What's going on?" She recognized the voice right away. Marty DeVos. He was one of the other newscasters at the station in a real piece of work. "I just needed a day to get away," she said, not really wanting to have a long conversation with him. "I thought I'd check to see since you didn't come in the station." Marty's voice was almost drowned out by the radio in the car. Kat knew why he was calling. Marty was a ladder-climbing parasite and cared little for whomever he stepped on as he went. He knew why she was away. "What is it you need, Marty?" "Can't a guy check on his favorite coworker?" he tried to bullshit her. "Well, considering we've known each other for 2 years and you've only spoken to me on about a dozen occasions, I'd say your call isn't for a crappy reason you're handing me." She waited for a response. "Damn, Kat, not very hospitable, are you?" She thought for a second. "Listen, I'm not in the mood for this today, Marty. I know you're calling about the story." So what's happened is she is working that story, and her boss has given her the exclusive assignment to follow the story and work, you know, with the FBI. This guy
right.
wants to horn in on her story. She doesn't like him, and I will tell you that later on in the book, near the end, she reluctantly accepts some help from him because it's the only choice she's got. And I think the readers, if they decide to read the book, will find out that would probably cheer because this guy gets his comeuppance later on near the end of the book.
Ooh, perfect. So in your process of retiring from the military, working with veterans, watching them go through their metamorphosis from, you know, being on duty versus being in the civilian world, which is very different, especially if you've been in the military for a really long time. And now you've retired and you're writing these books, and it's helping you with your own metamorphosis, so to speak. What gets you excited, the most excited about this process?
Are you talking about what gets me excited about working with the veterans and going through those experiences, or the writing itself, or both?
Both. What gets you excited,
okay,
Paul?
Well, I will tell you, I am, Rusty, I'm a very, very down-to-earth person. I am a very patriotic person. And, you know, to see in some of my own dealings, now I'm retired from the military, so for most of my care, you know, I use one of the military hospitals on a military base, my wife and I.
Right.
But
right.
In my dealings with the VA, of course, and when I worked at the VA before, I made a number of trips to the VA center here in Washington, D.C. And, of course, during part of my evaluation with the VA, I had to make several trips out there as well. And I think what sparks me, Rusty, is what I see out there. I can tell you that while there are a lot of good, hardworking people at the VA that I used to work with, they struggle to keep up with the patient load and the workload because of cuts in their budget by Congress. And
yeah.
the last time I was there, I was heartbroken. I can tell you that when I went in the place, and I'm dealing with, you know, not only the PTSD, but bad knees and bad feet from those 21 and a half years that I spent in the Army.
Yep.
But I still consider myself pretty lucky. When I went into the VA hospital out there, I saw older veterans, Vietnam veterans who are now up in years. They were out there, a lot of them in wheelchairs. They looked really, how can I say, and this is not men in a derogatory sense, but they looked very disheveled, very downtrodden.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, really a sad thing to see. And then I also saw at the opposite end of the demographics, I saw a lot of younger veterans in wheelchairs and all types of apparatus, missing arms, missing legs. And one of them that really struck me hard was I saw a young man that couldn't have been more than about 25 or 26 years old. His wife was there with him. He had two small children. And she was having to deal with the aftermath of all of this because he was missing a leg and an arm. And here was this young family and a young man that, you know, had his whole life in front of him. And now his family has been affected for the rest of their lives dealing with the aftermath of his service in the military. And I mean, it was just such a depressing experience that I had when I was out there. So what I guess you could say what kind of drives me is, you know, I try to take part in my local VFW here. I talk to the DAV here in town when we have events. I actually do charity book signings for a lot of organizations, too, especially the veterans organizations when they have events, the local fire department, the local police department when they have their annual fair. I will come and I will sign copies of my book, and everything above the expense of the book, I donate to those organizations. So I think that's what kind of drives me. I guess you could call me a little bit of an old soul, and I guess I deserve that title because I'll be 60 in August. So I'm getting
there.
Oh,
you're still
a
puppy.
Oh, yeah. Try telling that to my wife. Her nickname for me is Old Man. But you know, it's and I'm so blessed to have a wife that supports me in what I do. She has very similar feelings along these lines that I do, because she had a younger brother who spent a career in the Marine Corps. Three of our four boys spent time in the Army and the Marines, so we've kind of had a military family. And
yeah.
In fact, my father was killed on active duty in the Army when I was five. So I think this really kind of hits a deep soft spot for me, especially when I see these soldiers. And, you know, you can kind of laugh, I guess, if you want to, but my wife and I are those kind of people where if we see a couple of soldiers somewhere eating lunch or something like that, I mean, I've walked up to them and I walked up to the server and I've paid their check. So I think that's just kind of
nothing to laugh about. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would consider that kind of corny, but to me, I think it's an honor for me. And, you know, to be honest with you, that's the viewpoint I look at things from. And I have people come up to me. It's not like when those people came back from Vietnam. You know, I have people, because I'll run around in places and I'll have a military hat on occasionally, or my Army retired hat on. And I have people come up to me all the time and talk to me and thank me. And I tell my wife, I said, you know, I'm kind of embarrassed when that happens because I really don't know what to say other than thank you. And she said, well, you know, you shouldn't be embarrassed. She said, look at the career you spent. She said, and look at how you're paying for it physically and mentally. So she said, don't be embarrassed. And so I kind of look at things from that viewpoint, and it's really helped me because of how all that's been ingrained into me. By doing the writing that I do, it kind of gives me an outlet and helps me escape that, or at least let some of it out so that it comes to the surface. And I think that's kind of my outlook, my viewpoint.
Well, and I applaud you for taking the steps to find a way to at least have some of the darker stuff that you've experienced, the painful stuff, seep out in a positive format rather than, you know, the alternatives. I'm reading military.com right now, and they were talking about how in 2018, the suicide rates in service has jumped quite a bit. 68.
Oh, yeah.
And these are all active duties. These aren't deaths. I think the total was 351 last year alone. And each, you know, the Air Force had 58, but the largest one was the Army. I guess they had a remarkably larger loss. And those were active duty.
Yeah.
I haven't found anything for veterans. 321 active duty.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, I have to say in all fairness, the Army probably has a higher number because they're the largest active duty force. So,
right.
You know, when you look at a proportion, but no, you're absolutely right. And I will have to tell you, my wife, she is the one who finally kept pushing me to get help, because she saw what it was doing to me after all these years. And mine was kind of a late onset. And finally, when I went to get help and they referred me to a clinical psychologist, and I met with her and had a number of sessions with her before she diagnosed me, you know, she told me, she goes, well, you know, thank goodness. She said, you've actually managed this very well most of your life. But she said, now that you're not under a lot of the stress you were under earlier, she said, now this has an opportunity for the first time to manifest itself to where you have not dealt with it yet. And I see that in myself. And I really have to thank my wife a lot for that, in helping me and encouraging me to get the help that I needed. And I think that's why it's so important to me, some of these causes, because I deal with it on a personal level, so I know what some of these people are experiencing, and I know how important and how serious it can be.
And again, kudos to you and your wife for working so hard in dealing with the demons that is all part of, you know, war. And I love the fact that you just sound like a sweet fella. You don't sound like somebody who is angry or resentful or anything like that. I don't get that vibe from you at all. And that's part of healing, right? You know, just to be good with it, as good as you can be.
Well, you know what? I will tell you this. And, I mean, I appreciate the compliment. I look at it this way. It's like I told my wife, you know, I joined an all-volunteer military force. I made the decision to stay for a first career in it. So, you know, I don't think I have a right to be bitter about it because it's what I chose. It's what I decided to do. It's something that I felt was honorable. I feel like I had a duty and a responsibility to carry on where other people had left off. So, you know,
right.
I don't think I have a reason to be bitter about it because it was my choice. Now, there have been times, especially since I've retired, both physically and mentally, it's been very difficult. And I will share with you and the listeners that I had one specific instance one evening where I had some memories come back and hit me one morning. And when I first started getting help with this, there were times that I would burst out in tears and have tears go down my face. And, you know, I finally sit there and told my wife one morning, I told her, I said, you know, I said, with all the physical issues I'm dealing with the mental aspect of this, I told her, I said, it makes me wonder if I'm being punished for something because I don't think I've ever been a bad person. So it does have a tendency to really pull you down and draw you down, but I think the key is not letting it get to the extreme to where you can either yourself or you have people around you that help you pick yourself back up and keep going. And I think that makes a big difference.
But I definitely feel like you were doubly blessed with having a wife who's so supportive. Not many vets come home to that support. And I'm wondering what kinds of strategies you would offer just from your knowing and your personal experience, as well as observation through the vet center. What kinds of ways do you think that vets can reach out if they don't have a support system? Because not everybody has family, not everybody is married. And sometimes when they come back, they end up getting divorced because they're just not ready to come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what would you suggest? Well, what would you throw out there for the audience?
Well, I know that they are doing – I have a friend of mine here that owns his own business, his own company here, and they do a lot of work for the government. And I will just tell you that I know right now they're doing a study on a way to try and help combat veteran suicide. One of the things that a lot of veterans don't do in talking with him and his experience and his research that they're doing for the project is you have a lot of veterans out there that are very hesitant to reach out when they're dealing with especially mental issues because
right.
they're afraid of the stigma. And you think about it, and I had to deal my way through this as well. I told my doctor, you know, I said, you don't understand how difficult this is because I spent 21 years in a career where you were expected to be on top of your game, mentally and physically tough, be able to see and do things that normal people would not see or do, and yet carry right on and continue on with the mission and what you were required to do. So, you know, I told her, I said, now that I'm at a point in my life where I'm away from that, I told her, I said, I'm not used to being number one, having physical disability issues. Because I struggle with, I just had foot surgery before the holidays because of injuries from my military career. I've got bad knees.
Yeah.
So you're not used to dealing with not only the physical aspect, but especially the mental aspect. You're always used to being the one to be able to pick someone up and help carry the load. And now that you're in a position where you can't do that any longer, it really affects you mentally. And it took me some time in my sessions with my doctor and talking with my wife through things to where I finally came to the realization that I don't have to do that anymore. It's okay to reach out for help. It's okay to need help. And if you don't have a family to do it, I mean, I will just say, there are numbers at the VA. They have a suicide hotline. They have a discussion hotline that are on several of their websites. The Veterans eBenefits website, eBenefits.gov, is there. They have hotlines there that you can call. So, I mean, my encouragement would be to other people that are experiencing this, don't feel like you have to be the one to continue to carry the load, because you're not in that capacity any longer, and you need and you deserve the help that you should be getting. So there's nothing wrong with reaching out for it. That's kind of what I would want to stress.
Fair enough. And I think that's a great way to start, or at least try. And I think it's very difficult, especially for men, to raise their hand up and say, hey, I got an issue, because women are more likely to have that conversation. Men don't want to necessarily be vulnerable that way. And
yeah,
so I'm glad that it's coming from you, so that other men out there can feel like you can do this, you can have that conversation, and it's okay, and you're safe.
Well, yeah, let me just share one other thing with you, Rusty, that my wife has done for me. You know, she's all of 4 feet 9 and probably weighs 120 pounds soaking wet. She's a tiny little girl.
Yep.
But she has helped me carry this load. And she's the one who finally convinced me, along with my doctor, that look, you're not by yourself. You do not have to have that macho appearance, that macho air. You know, what's more important, your ego, your machismo, or your mental and physical well-being? And, you know, she really was instrumental in helping me realize that. And, I mean, I will forever be indebted to her for that, because, you know, she's a little younger than I am, but at my age, you know, she's with me at my side. I feel confident that she'll be with me until I'm gone. And, you know, that makes a big difference in how you deal with this, having that support system. So that's why I said it's important, if you have veterans out there or just someone out there who's struggling, if they don't have the family support system, the veterans have numerous veteran support systems and suicide hotlines. You know, even in your community, you have churches, you have suicide watch groups, you have people that you can reach out to. So I just want to stress, don't be afraid to reach out for that help.
Amen. And I absolutely testify that that is a very important thing to do. So, Paul, you have a couple of more minutes. This is a great place for us to segue one more time, give you a moment to have a little commercial of Paul. How do we find Paul? What's Paul doing next? Paul. Kind of like Marsha.
No, I appreciate that. And like I said, anyone who would like to get in touch with me or take a look at my website, to look at my books, they can get on my website at literaryvet.net. If you do a search, I'm going to come up in one of about the top four or five, usually on the list. And also they can reach me at literaryvet@gmail.com. But as I said, you know, please take a look at my website, read a little bit there, take a look at my books. And, you know, if you have any questions or you'd like to get in touch with me or share anything with me, you can contact me either by my website, because there's an email section on my website where you can contact me, or you can contact me at theliteraryvet@gmail.com as well.
Yay. So what are you going to do this summer? Is there anything fun? Are you doing any book signings? Are you doing any charity work?
I'm going to be doing it's funny you should ask that, because just very quickly, I'm going to be doing a Love Your Local Author event here in Alexandria, Virginia, later on near the end of the summer. I'm going to be doing a signing at one of our local bookstores here in Manassas during the summer. One of the things that I found that also helps me too, and I'll just share this with you very quickly, is a couple of years ago for Christmas, my wife and I are big fans of Jeff Dunham, the ventriloquist, and you probably know
him. Oh, he is hysterical. Yeah, I've seen him live twice. I love. So much fun.
we did too. We've seen him live twice, to include the time when he was in Richmond, Virginia, where they filmed for television Controlled Chaos, if you remember that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So my wife and I were in the audience that night. Well, she bought me one of his actual working ventriloquism dummies. In fact, it's his little Jeff dummy, the one that looks like him.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing as a tool when I go out to do book signings, I've been practicing my ventriloquism. And I've gotten pretty decent at it. I'm not a pro at all, but I've gotten decent enough to where I think later on by the end of the summer, I'm going to venture out with my little Jeff dummy. I'm going to dress him in a camouflage top, and I'm going to name him Sarge, and he's going to be my own personal literary critic that I take to my book signings.
All right, everybody, you heard it first. Paul is taking over Jeff Dunham's job. This is going to be great.
No, I wish I could, but no.
Watch out, Jeff. Paul's coming. Going to get you. I think that's going to be fun. You're going to have to come on the show, and we'll figure out how to make that work, but learn more about your fellow soldier that's growing. That just sounds like another great outlet for you. I love it.
Well, maybe I'll do that, Rusty. Maybe I'll contact you later on once I get out and see if we can do the short segment with Sarge.
That would be fun. I will be traveling through your country first week of June and the first week of August. So
okay.
Maybe we can do like a little quick video. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I think that would be fun, and it would be nice to meet you in person and learn more about how I can help as the radio talk show host.
That sounds good.
So you have 4 minutes to give us your last words.
Well, let me just say this, Rusty. I mean, and I, again, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on the show. I really think it's important for me to be able to share these experiences, not only the fact that I write to help me deal with them, but the experiences that I've gone through, because, you know, it was my father, like I said, who died when I was young, was killed on active duty, that kind of was my inspiration to try the Army. And when I first joined the Army, I didn't know how long I was going to stay. I went more as a curiosity. And you could probably sit there and say, boy, that's a nutcase. Who's going to go through basic training as a curiosity? I sometimes, when I got there, wondered, what have I done? But, you know, I will tell you that through him and his death and the motivations I've had, I think I've got to experience so many things that I would have never had the opportunity to do. And now I try to share those experiences and some of the ways I'm dealing with them with so many other people whenever I get the opportunity. So I think, to me, I think that's what's important. And to me, I think that's the direction I'm going to continue to go.
And just from my perspective, I hope you continue in that direction, because every voice has a reason and a story, and sometimes you can have three people in the same room telling the same exact story, but not everybody's going to resonate with that, all three of them. They're only going to resonate with one or two of them. And to hear that you have choices and to hear that there is support and to hear that you can do something positive and productive and that the stuff that's going on in your head is literally just stuff going on in your head. Hopefully will inspire other people in that same situation to find something productive and a happy and healthy way to cope rather than drugs and alcohol and, you know, domestic violence, all of the other things that happen when we just can't deal. So kudos to you and your wife for doing so much for our community as a whole. And I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. And I hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Rusty. And thank you to your listeners.
All right, dear. We were just talking to author Paul Hulbert. His latest book is Term Limits. He's got another one coming out. What a champion for people. What a champion for PTSD. And what a champion for vets. I love, love, love when people come on and they take their adversity and they turn it into this beautiful tool to help other people. And he might be writing fictionally, but I think a lot of that seepage of personal history and what he's seen and witnessed and been part of is also woven into these books, and that helps other people. So definitely go out, buy his book, support him, theliterarywet.net, Paul Hulbert. You can find him on Amazon. That's where I found his book. It was amazing. And whatever you can do to be supportive of our local vets, that would be great. Really appreciate that. Next week, we have Anita Wilson on. She has an incredible story about people living with chronic illness, chronic pain, addiction, and depression. She actually has an alias, and it's going to be really exciting how she's woven her story and her stuff into an anagram called Alias in Town. So we get to learn all about that. You can check her out ahead of time at aliasintown.com. That's going to be exciting, just as Paul was exciting today. Paul Hulbert, Term Limits, check him out. So much good stuff going on. And I'm packing and getting ready to watch my daughter graduate 8th grade. Oh, there's just so much stuff. And getting ready to go up north to drop her off at her father's. So it's been very, very busy, but I cannot tell you. I live for my Thursdays. I love this time. I love meeting new people. I love having the experience of somebody else's life, even if it's only for 45 minutes. Until next time, know that you're loved. Know that you're beautiful. Know that you can do something really, really crazy and really, really fun, like write a book or make dragons or finger paint or toe paint. Yeah, that's the thing. Toe paint's new. It's all over Instagram and Pinterest. Check it out, toe painting. I will talk to you next Thursday here at Living and Thriving with Rusty. Peace out. Sleep 5 minutes later, drive 5 miles slower, hug 5 minutes longer, and have the best week.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.